we will have to dwell a little more on this dark night of the soul, because this is a passage which in spiritual journey everyone goes through. It's not only about bliss and beautiful things and instantly love and joy awakening in the heart, but there are deserts and morasses which one has to cross. But also because in the course of Savitri, we have reached a point where this is the mood of the moment. In Book 1, Canto 1, we have three things to which we are introduced. One is the day, and the physical space, the whole universe, the earth as the canvas, and in that earth there is that dawn, that light of the day. And like a master artist, Shubhendu blends two emotions, if you may say so, which seem so contrary. Dawn brings hope. Dawn brings light. And while this dawn has come and everybody wakes up to the labor and the struggle, Savitri wakes up to the pang divine. So this dawn is for her the darkest night, and Shurbindo introduces us the third thing to which he introduces. The second is Savitri's personality, and the third is the mood of the moment. So he has introduced us to the background, the canvas, the place where the high drama is being played, and the background theme. He introduces us to the main character, Savitri, who is none else but the divine incarnate. And then he ends the canto, and with that he begins the second one with the mood of the moment. So we are in the mood of the moment, but a moment which seems to stretch into infinity. So a couple of prayers of the mother more, and then we'll read how Sri Aurobindo describes it in Savitri. And what a close correspondence there is. This is not just poetry, this is real life, real spiritual life, if one may use the word, because spiritual life is not just about walking on rose petals. At one place, Shubhendu speaks about it, that what lotus eating, rose petal disciples you are, who are moved by the little, you know, if the breeze is a little strong, oh, I am hurt. If the temperature rises a little more, oh, it's so hot and sweating. Here is real spirituality in the thick of the night. And yet to keep awake and alive, that flame. So we'll just read a couple of more passages from Prayers and Meditations to get fully into the mood of the moment. And the mood of the moment is utter darkness and chaos. In one of our prayers, November 15th, 1914, page 270-271, she writes this diary entry: from the sum of resistances, one can gauge the scope thou wouldst give to the action of that among thy pure forces which is coming to manifest upon earth. What opposes is just that upon which it is the mission of these forces to act. And we flee from the difficulty. That's why she would write later, what is the command thou hast given me? Don't flee from the danger. Turn back, face it and fight. That is the path. The path of the hero that she comes to teach us, that if you have a difficulty and a danger, face it and fight and conquer it. What opposes is just that upon which it is the mission of these forces to act. Of course, there is a right way of facing it and fighting and conquering it, and a wrong way. The right ways, or rather the wrong way which we all face, is to face darkness with a greater darkness. To face hatred with a greater hatred, to face enmity animosity with a greater animosity, to respond to bitterness with a greater intensity of bitterness, and see who will conquer. But her is the path of transformation, the path of divine love. So she is telling us, what opposes is just that upon which it is the mission of thy forces to act. It is the darkest hatred which must be touched and transformed into luminous peace. If the human individual thou hast chosen as thy center of action and thy intermediary meets with few obstacles, few misunderstandings, and little hatred, it means that thou hast entrusted to him a limited mission without any intensity. So it's not the sign of a great, to our credit, and a great grace. Ah, my life was so easy and so nice. There were no problems at all. We should think twice. Has the divine forgotten me? His chosen ones, the Pandavas, were cast aside into the furnace of purification again and again. They would build Indraprastha out of Khandavprastha, a desert wasteland. That is probably the first experiment of Auroville documented in Indian history. Go to the desert and build a beautiful place, and yet you will be banished from there. You have to face the fight after years of purification and preparation. The chosen ones, Sri Aurobindo would tell us in the Law of the Way, he would say, hell would vomit its hordes, heaven will meet thee with its cold and pitiless denials. Thou sayest that the grace of the Divine Mother is with me, then thou knowest not that it is far more difficult to hold and keep the grace of the Divine Mother than to guard Kubera's treasures. It's easier to guard the treasures of the god Kubera, who is the god of wealth, than to hold and guard grace. So here she is saying, it's so different from our customary view. If somebody meets with difficulties and say, probably he must have done some bad karmas. And here she is telling us, probably God has chosen him, is preparing him for something beautiful. It is in the narrow circle of already prepared men of goodwill that he will act, and not upon the chaotic and confused mass of terrestrial substance. And another place, she speaks of the great renunciation, the renunciation of the divine. The mother does not talk so much about renunciation to us. In fact, in one of her writings, she says, what to say about renunciation? If you have the feeling that you are renouncing, it's not really renunciation. Because it should be something full of gladness and joy. If there is a feeling that you have left something, and then all our life we remind God, I left this for you, do you remember? I left this for you, do you remember? After a while, God will say, okay, fine, you take back all that. I don't want, please take it. I am happy without your gift. So what is true renunciation? In one of her very beautiful passages, which is an explanation to an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo, she says, don't try to be holy among the holies. It's very strange and paradoxical. Don't try to look pure where it's so easy to look pure. At least in India, it's very easy. All that you have to do is go to the market and buy a 6.5 meters wide dress, or maybe a saffron dress, and wear a necklace. Not necklace, what is a Rudraksh? Put a little bit of tikka here. And it's very easy. Everybody knows a little bit of Gita, Ramayana, and you know, and sit near the banks of the Ganges. You don't have to bother about your livelihood. Very soon you will be flying in jet onto a trip to America, giving lectures. and you'll have lot of devotees who will look after you. This is the so easy to look holy. She says, don't try to do that. Confront that which is inside. Accept the burden, she says, accept the burden. In all of us, there is a burden of darkness, the shadow. And we have to accept it, and constantly, by accepting is not indulging in it. To accept it means this is what must be worked upon. And not look holy within and look at the shadow of others. Confront one's own shadow and conquer it by constantly opening it to grace. So here she is telling us, this is something she hears in her meditation, by renouncing everything, even wisdom and consciousness, the renunciation of the Divine Mother. We have heard about renunciations. Oh, he is a great sannyasi. Hey, he renounced his family. So you go a little closer and ask him, sir, you renounced your family? Yes, yes. So can you tell us a little bit about your family? No, nothing. I was married in Allahabad. I had 6 daughters and, you know. What were you doing, sir? I was in the post of a manager. But, you know, it's so difficult to get daughters married. Now I'm in this ashram. I'm very peaceful. That's the kind of renunciation. When someone came to Swami Vivekananda and said, young man, he said, I want to renounce life. So Vivekananda asked him, what do you have to renounce? You must have something to renounce. So he tells him, go back. First earn 1 lakh rupees. That was the time 1 lakh meant a lot. First go and earn 1 lakh rupees, then you come and renounce. Then let us see whether you will actually renounce or not. It's so easy to renounce when we have actually nothing to renounce. And here is someone who has not only the entire world at one's disposal externally, but also the inner wealth. Buddha renounces the kingdom and walks into the forest. He renounces outer wealth so that he can gain inner wealth. Such a beautiful thing. Sri Aurobindo has fame, he has name. With his capacity, he could be at the top place anywhere, command it. But along with all the outer wealth of the world, he has all the inner wealth. Same with the mother. And yet, they renounce. This is renunciation. They renounce not only something external, but renounce something internal to bring themselves down to our own stature, to move amidst us. So she says, she writes, she hears this communication by renouncing everything, and see what everything includes, even wisdom and consciousness. Thou wert able to prepare thy heart for the role assigned to it. Apparently the most unrewarding role, that of the spring which always lets its waters flow abundantly for all, but towards which no waters can ever run back. That's why she could tell someone, when someone said, all the time I have to meet criticism from everyone around. So she reminds of what Sri Aurobindo wrote in one of his letters. But you have not done good to that person. Why is he criticizing you? As if the reward of doing good is to get criticism. This is human life. So she is telling us the most unrewarding role. You have to give, give, and give. What do you get? Nothing. Or no, we don't give nothing. I have labored and suffered in matter's night to bring the fire to man, but the hate of hell and the human spite are my meat since the earth began. For man's mind is the dupe of his animal self, hoping its lust to win. He harbors within him a grisly elf, enamored of sorrow and sin. Every time we are bitter, we would say, no, we don't give all this to divine. Who the other people hate? Ravana hated him. We don't hate. Every time we are bitter, every time we are full of anger, every time we are depressed, every time we are full of doubt, we pass on to her a portion of our struggle, sorrow and fall. We give her this gift. Sometimes we wrap it in nice papers. Mother, I am very nice. Because of him, I am depressed and angry. Beautiful paper. He is bad. I am very nice. Please do something. She takes that gift. What does she give back in return? Love. Love and more love. So this is the role she is saying. The most unrewarding work. You become like the spring that gives, but towards which no water can ever run back. It draws its inexhaustible strength from the depths and expects nothing from outside. The first preparation, either to be ready to do divine work, if at all, it's a very big word. As Shubhendu says, we should be free of all these expectations, all desires and egoism. So every time an expectation is not fulfilled, we should rejoice. Thank you. One more bar you have broken. How does Shubhendu, in the jail, he speaks in his Uttarpada speech that when he goes to jail, he questions, why hast thou put me into this jail? You assured me protection till this work is done. I have not asked for myself this protection. I have asked because I am serving the country. I want it to be free. Is this not a correct mission? You assured me of protection and you have put me here in the jail. And then he hears the Adesh, wait and see. And then he discovers, he says, the bonds that I did not have the power to break, thou hast broken it. This is the attitude, expecting nothing from outside. But thou canst already sense the sublime felicity that accompanies this inexhaustible expansion of love. She is not saying, why hast thou done this, O Lord? She says, it immediately fills one's heart with delight. Ananda and peace are the signs of divine presence, Shubhendu has said. In fact, there are four aspects of the higher consciousness: peace, light, power and ananda. But thou canst already sense the sublime felicity that accompanies this inexhaustible expansion of love. For love is sufficient unto itself and needs no reciprocity. This is the kind of love she brought into the earth. No reciprocity. Even those who left and revolted and went away, she would love them. And even keep room for them for years. And people would say, but so and so has gone away. Why do you keep room? No. His soul comes at night to rest in this atmosphere. This is the kind of love she brought. And the person revolts, I don't accept the mother. And therefore he has gone. And the mother keeps room for him. His soul comes at night to rest here. For love is sufficient unto itself and needs no reciprocity. This is true even of individual love. How much more true than of divine love, which so nobly reflects the infinite? This is the love that she brings in Savitri. Be this love in all things and everywhere, ever more widely, ever more intensely, and the whole world will become at the same time thy work and thy wealth, thy field of action and thy conquest. The whole world becomes her ashram. The whole world becomes a center for thy radiating action. If we could manifest even a little drop of that love, and that becomes a means for her conquest. At one place, Sri Aurobindo says, what it means, the mother's victory. Of course, we shout, Victuala Dusmer. It's so beautiful. What really it means? It's the victory of the mother over each one of us. This is what Sri Aurobindo says. This is the meaning. The meaning is not that we shout it and the next moment in the heart I nurture victory to my ego self. So this is what she says. By the love, the conquest, fight with persistence to break down the last limits, which are only frail barriers before the expansion of the being, to vanquish the last obscurities already being lit up by the illuminate power. Fight in order to conquer and triumph. Fight to overcome everything that was till today, to make the new light spring forth, the new example the world needs. God's own example. This is the example the world needs. Fight stubbornly against all obstacles. And someone asked Sri Aurobindo constantly about obstacles and depression. He says, be more persistent than the difficulty. This is the divine use of stubbornness. There is a virtue of every vice, and every virtue can turn into a vice depending on how we place it. A virtue can turn into a vice if, like Karna, we say, I have promised my soul to this man who gave me a kingdom. Therefore, I will fight from his side, even if God is standing opposite. Very good virtue, but turns into a vice. It was the loyalty of Hitler's men and their obedience, things which we want to inculcate in children. But how dangerous, because Hitler's men were very loyal and very obedient. The only people who were disloyal and disobedient to him were truly worthwhile. And stubbornness, which we feel so bad. Oh, this child. Nowadays, all children are stubborn. All the teachers will tell us. Is they so stubborn? So beautiful. If only this stubbornness can turn into a stubbornness against every obstacle. The day they get the right use of this stubbornness, it would be something so beautiful. So she is telling, fight stubbornly. Only the stubborn can fight stubbornly. Against all obstacles, inner or outer, it is the pearl of great prize which is offered for thy realization. This is 1915. 16 years later. And what is that day? The great Siddhi day. We celebrate, and it must have been celebrated. We must have gone and done pranam and felt so beautiful. It's very interesting to see November 24th, 1931. So this is one of the Siddhi days, and there must have been an air of celebration. People would have felt nice going, doing pranam. But what was the mother's experience? What is she documenting in her diary? Almost 16 years after that, she has used the word fight stubbornly. Oh my Lord, my sweet Master, for the accomplishment of thy work, I have sunk down into the unfathomable depths of matter. This is a darshan day. And she chooses to sink into the unfathomable depths of matter. I have touched with my finger the horror of the falsehood and the inconscience. I have reached the seat of oblivion and a supreme obscurity. But in my heart was the remembrance. From my heart there leaped the call which could arrive to thee. This is what she is praying, sunk in that entire horror of falsehood, touching the bedrock of inconscience. On a darshan day, this is the Divine Mother praying for all of us. Lord, Lord, everywhere thy enemies appear triumphant. Even if in our personal life, even if we are the ones who are the wrongdoers and our so-called enemy appears triumphant, we say, Lord, are you really there? Is there anyone like that? I don't believe there is God. If there was God, why should I lose my court case when everything was right on my side? And when you ask what was everything right, 2 generations back, my grandfather had usurped this land and now it has been slipped away from my hand. This is the kind of approach we have. And here she is saying, Lord, Lord, everywhere thy enemies seem to triumph. Falsehood is the monarch of the world. Life without thee is a death, a perpetual hell. Doubt has usurped the place of hope, and revolt has pushed out submission. Faith is spent, gratitude is not born. Faith, which is the bedrock of safety, even before aspiration is born, in the darkness of night, one holds on to faith. That is finished in man's heart. Faith is spent. No more faith is there. Gratitude is not born, which is such a shy goddess. She doesn't come into men's hearts easily. Mother speaks about this goddess, and by her own example, she has shown what gratitude can be. There is someone so uncouth, and she would allow a great liberty to this individual to see her at any time. And one of her close confidant asked her, why do you allow this uncouth man to take so much liberty with you? I think you are being very indulgent with him. She says, you know something? I feel grateful towards him. Grateful towards somebody like him? We have not seen. He has done any good to you? And then she would say, when first time I came to Pondicherry, I was looking for where is Shurbindo's house, and I asked him, and he is the one who pointed his finger and said, there he lives. That's all. His whole merit was that he pointed to her the house where the Lord dwells. And she felt grateful towards him. This is the kind of love she has brought. And she is lamenting, gratitude is not born in men's heart. Gratitude is not born. Blind passions and murderous instincts and a guilty weakness have covered and stifled thy sweet law of love. Lord, will thou permit thy enemies to prevail, falsehood and ugliness and suffering to triumph? Lord, give the command to conquer and victory will be there. This is the time when mother had fallen very seriously ill. She had withdrawn for a while from all public contact for a few months. Of course, much later also this would happen. I know we are unworthy. I know the world is not yet ready. But I cry to thee with an absolute faith in thy grace. And I know that thy grace will save. Thus my prayer rushed up towards thee. And from the depths of the abyss, I beheld thee in thy radiant splendor. Thou didst appear and thou saidst to me, lose not courage, be firm, be confident, I come. What beautiful words. And this is what Sri Aurobindo describes. This is the mood of the moment when Savitri would wake up. She has done for 1 year, she has gone through a whole process of pain and struggle and questioning and doubt and denial. Even she has to make a choice whether she should just walk into the footsteps of her husband or confront time and death. And she has made the choice. This whole year she has gone through, and now this is the day when she has to confront that grim horror of death, and nobody knows, not even Satyavan. Even he is not told that, look, you know something, Mr. Satyavan, I am the one who is going to save you. She becomes as if just close to her, close to him. Even he does not know who is she who is guarding him. So this is the mood of the moment. Sri Aurobindo has introduced us to the day, the stage, the background. He has introduced us to Savitri, and now he introduces us to the mood of the moment. On page 7, last 5-6 lines. Too unlike the world, she came to help and save. Her greatness weighed upon its ignorant breast. And from its dim chasms welled a dire return, a portion of its sorrow, struggle, fall, the revolt against the divine. To live with grief, to confront death on her road, the mortal's lot became the immortal's share. Man will not be ready. That's what she's saying. I know the world is not ready. So what I should do? I become the world, and become not only the one who offers the sacrifice, but also that which is sacrificed. This is the great holocaust of the Divine Mother, so beautifully symbolized in two stories, Indian myths. The Chinnamasta, where the mother destroys her own body, and the myth of Sati, who throws herself into the purifying flame so that out of these flames Parvati may arise. And the lament of Shiva, who carries the dead body, and Vishnu, the preserver, has to destroy it. It is the story of destruction of old creation and how the new creation would arise. So she becomes not just the fire of sacrifice. She becomes not only the one who offers the sacrifice on our behalf. That we know, that we offer our prayers and aspiration to her, and she transfers it to the divine. She lights the fire of aspiration. But Sri Aurobindo is revealing a still deeper secret. She becomes the subject and the object of the sacrifice. All came back to her. Earth and love and doom. The last two lines on this page. Page number 9. Page 9. The last two lines. This is the morning she has woken up. And what? Who greets her? We want to be greeted by this, that person. Who is greeting her? Earth comes to her. Remember, my destiny is in your hands. Doom comes to her. I am going to snatch Earth's destiny. I am going to plunge it into darkness. You want to save man's soul out of ignorance? Who has given you this right and this claim? See what is going to happen in the evening. Satyavan will be mine. And with him, I will be victorious. And then love also comes to her. Savitri, you are my only hope. You are the one who can save earth and annihilate doom. So all these three greet her in the morning. This is the good morning day of Savitri, who comes to say good morning, each pleading her case, earth and love and doom. The ancient disputants encircled her. These are the ancient disputants. So interesting. At the very origin of creation, the mother would tell us this story, that how when these energies separated themselves from the divine origin and plunged into the utter inconscience, that is doom. What is doom? Doom is not what we understand. Doom is not, oh, so much bad happened to him in outer life. As mother would tell us, the only tragedy of life is to have died without realizing your soul. That is one doom. All of us almost universally go through it. And we don't even feel bad. The best is we are happy if everything external has been good. But we don't realize the real doom, the real tragedy is to have died without realizing the soul. Because that's what inconscience wants or does not want us to realize, so that its reign can continue. That is the doom. So they plunge into doom, these energies. And then out of that doom arises a prayer from these deviant, errant energies, the great fall, which we find in Paradise Lost. Milton speaks about it. And then there is the paradise regained. So the great call arises, save. And love descends. Divine rushes into it. And love is born. Love is the link twixt heaven and earth. And as it descends into the darkness of inconscience, out of inconscience, matter is crystallized. Earth is born out of the meeting of love and doom. And since the inception of earth, love and doom wrestle as opponents, who will win finally. And love gradually pulls earth out and out of this chaos and inconscience, creates life, creates flowers, creates butterflies, also insects and snakes. And doom again cast its spell. It creates animal life, and now it has created man. And now that love will create something still greater. So all these three come to her. So Savitri's being is not just that moment. Shobindu links to eternity. The mood of the moment is the mood under which earth has evolved. Earth and love and doom, the ancient disputants encircled her like giant figures wrestling in the night. The godheads from the dim inconscient born, evoke to struggle and the pang divine. And in the shadow of her flaming heart, at the somber center of the dire debate, a guardian of the unconsoled abyss, inheriting the long agony of the globe, a stone still figure of high and godlike pain, stared into space with fixed regardless eyes, that saw grief's timeless depths but not life's goal. This is how the man of sorrows is created, that only looks at the struggle. Every time all our struggle, our pain and suffering goes and makes the inconscient still heavy. Every time we suffer or make others suffer, either ways, actually we add little more strength to that stone still figure of high and godlike pain that sees nothing but sorrow's depths. It does not see grace. And then we say, mother, I love you. Yes, we do love, but we strengthen Bali while claiming to be on the side of Rama. This is how our love is. So, a guardian of the unconsoled abyss. When one is in that state, nothing can console, nothing helps, nothing works. It doesn't believe in grace. It is an unconsoled abyss, and as human beings, we can go through those states. Inheriting the long agony of the globe, it doesn't believe. In fact, mother says one of the greatest difficulty when she was going through the transformation of the body, she says, these cells have so much trust. They have evolved through so much struggle that the only thing they know is struggle and pain. They just cannot have trust in grace. They say, how can we have trust in grace? Millions of years, the only thing we know is struggle and pain, struggle and pain. And then there are very intelligent doctors like us who reinforce this faith in the struggle and the pain and say, unless you take medicines, you will not be cured. Grace is very nice, all is very right, but you better follow this or that. Not that there is anything wrong with that. Please don't quote me. The point is that it inherits. Matter does not believe that there is something like grace. Stared into space with fixed, regardless eyes that saw grief's timeless depths, but not life's goal. This is Prometheus bound, who is punished to steal fire, and he is bound forever to the abyss. And vultures must constantly pluck his body. This is the punishment that is given to him. Afflicted by his harsh divinity, bound to his throne, he waited unappeased the daily oblation of her unwept tears. What was it wanting every day? Come, cry before me. It feeds on pain and tears. It wants human beings to feel sorry, unhappy, be full of pain, so that it can be nourished from that. That is the kind of perverse divinity, the very opposite, the shadow. Not bliss, but it becomes its very opposite and feeds on that. So who will offer the tears? Who will offer God's martyred body to the world? Savitri says, oh, your cup is not full because of everybody's tears? Come, a teardrop from my eyes will fall into thy cup. And see, you will be full of faith. That is the kind of teardrop of the divine. That is the kind of offering Savitri makes. All the fierce question of man's hours relived, the sacrifice of suffering and desire, earth offers to the immortal ecstasy, began again beneath the eternal hand. The mother is the goal, the mother is the path. She is not only waiting for us at the end of the journey, she is the one who starts the journey. She is the one who conducts the journey, and she is the one who walks with us throughout the journey. When we fall into the abyss, mother says, my child, I do not stand and watch you. Oh, he has fallen. I sink with you because I am you. Earth offers to the immortal ecstasy, began again beneath the eternal hand. Awake, she endured the moment's serried march and looked on this green, smiling, dangerous world and heard the ignorant cry of living things amid the trivial sounds, the unchanging scene. We don't hear that cry of ignorant living things. She would hear, and that's why, and she carries that cry right up to the Supreme. And she is face to face with the Supreme, and she is asked for 3 bones. And there is a pause, world-destroying pause. What should she ask? And she hears the cry of a million beings climb up through her. And so she asks, "Thy peace, O Lord, a boon within to keep for the struggling soul of man, for the mighty soul of man." So she hears that ignorant cry of living things amid the trivial sounds, the unchanging scene. Her soul arose, confronting time and fate. Immobile in herself, she gathered force. This was the day when Satyavan must die.